The Rock may be difficult to deal with.
A Maze Runner reboot is happening because why not?
Mike Flanagan's directing the new Exorcist movie.
And, of course, this week's ridiculously insane box office.
All of that and more on this week's episode of the Movie Nights Roundtable. Hello, buddy. How are you?
I am good. How are you, my friend?
Good. I love how we asked that as if we haven't had several conversations before the camera started.
As if I haven't been here for an hour already.
Yes. Yeah. You just get hooded, brought into the seat, and this is the first time we see each other.
I don't even get to know what the articles are. I'm just vibing.
100%. And speaking of the articles, guys, we have a huge show. Tons of stories to talk about. But before we get into the new stories, there is one follow-up story that we wanted to bring back. And last week we reported about the kind of bidding war for Paramount between Sony and Skydance. And the follow-up here is Skydance, their exclusivity window has now expired. And Sony and Apollo have made the all-cash $26 billion offer for Paramount. And they're thinking it over right now. We've seen a lot of changes. The CEO got fired. A lot of the main investors in Paramount have started selling their stocks. You know, it's a mess over there. But the big difference in the two different bids, Skydance just wanted Paramount film. Sony wants all of Paramount. Mm-hmm. Hence the higher offer and the all-cash bid. But I did want to follow up, kind of bring that back, that has officially now happened. They have made that offer, and hopefully they don't drop the answer tomorrow, because we record Sunday, you watch Tuesday. If they drop it Monday, that would be super shitty, and I have to do like a virtual thing to say like, hey.
You're going
to
see a little Dalton pop up on a Zoom window, and like, let me tell you why this guy's an idiot.
Yeah, exactly.
Because he didn't wait.
Yeah, but quick thoughts before we dive into the stories on the update.
No, I mean, it's definitely, you know, we kind of gave our thoughts last week's episode about the whole Sony buying it. It's definitely a hell of an offer.
Yeah, for sure.
That's for sure. $26 billion cash, which if you asked me, I would not have told you that Sony had that much money.
Yeah, no. Well, they've been saving up from not having a streaming service, so.
Yeah, but also they put out Madam Web.
That's true. That is true. Hence Apollo coming in to help.
Yep.
But yeah, I just wanted to give you guys that update. And with that down, we are now going to dive into our first news story of the day. And Nicholas, what do you got for us first?
Our first story comes to us from The Hollywood Reporter, and that is that The Maze Runner is officially getting a reboot, with Transcendence scribe Jack Paglen in talks to write.
Yes, and 20th Century Studios, which was formerly known as Fox, as we know, is developing the reboot, and I'm now going to read from the article here. The Maze Runner is back at the starting line. 20th Century Studios is rebooting the sci-fi action-adventure franchise, which ran as a trilogy from 2014 to 2018. The Disney arm is in negotiations to tap Jack Paglen, perhaps best known for writing the Johnny Depp-starring sci-fi movie Transcendence, to pen the script for the new installment. Wes Ball, who directed the original trilogy, will also be involved as a producer, so, you know, at least he's sticking around as a producer there, maybe some feedback and input. And I think the most interesting part of this story is, taken from the article still, according to sources, the reboot is not a redo of the story, nor is it a direct sequel to the original trilogy. The hope is to make some sort of continuation of the story, yet also return the elements that made the first movie connect with audiences. That's the part that worries me. And it's not even the fact that it's not technically a reboot or a sequel. We've seen movies do that successfully before. It's that it's very vague, and that the hope is to make a continuation of the story, yet also return to the elements that made the first movie connect with audiences. Well, what made it connect with audiences is that it was pretty fun, and it was a decent movie. Mm-hmm. You know, like, just do that, and you'll be fine.
Yeah.
You know, the where you go with this doesn't really matter. It does have the writer of a movie that's not very good, but I'm unfamiliar with his other work. I did not do a great job researching this. I just kind of saw Transcendence and went, okay.
Yikes.
But yeah, I passively enjoy The Maze Runner. I didn't see all of the films. I know you've seen them all.
Mm-hmm.
As someone who would, I would consider you a Maze Runner fan.
Yeah.
Your thoughts on this?
It's kind of a weird thing because I'm against this.
Okay.
I think that the last movie came out in 2018. Like, we're not far enough removed where it's like, oh, you know, we really need to like update this with like better graphic, you know, something that we're trying to do now. Like when they did like the all-female Ghostbusters movie,
yeah.
They were like, oh, let's see what Ghostbusters look like with, you know, 2016 effects.
Mm-hmm.
You know, The Maze Runner was a great adaptation of everything and just good movies altogether. They were all, I think, very successful at the box office. and got really good reviews. I enjoyed quite all of them. But it's a similar, interesting thing is they're kind of doing what they're doing with the new Planet of the Apes, where it's kind of like, yeah, it is linearly mm-hmm. in the timeline, but we're making it so far removed that it isn't like a sequel.
Yeah.
But I don't think we're far enough away from it to be rebooting this anyway. Like, they're still, you can go back and just watch them.
Yeah.
They still hold up.
Can I play devil's advocate?
Yeah.
6 years ago was 2018.
Yeah.
Do you think it's not been long enough for a reboot type situation? Or do you think in this timeline, if they were going to do anything, it should just be like a sequel with everybody?
Sequel.
Okay. You think the 10-year mark is maybe where you go down reboot territory?
I mean, I think so. But like, also, I think that they're not a global sensation like, let's say, Harry Potter was. Mm-hmm. But it's like the Harry Potter movies still stand on their own. I think that the Maze Runner, especially out of the YA dystopia sort of trend that happened in that era, you know, I think Hunger Games is the one that took off.
Mm-hmm.
Insurgent was awful.
Yeah.
And I think the Maze Runner ones was probably my favorite of those, mm-hmm. you know, and it's interesting. But I don't know how far the books go with the Maze Runner. Is it just three and they adapted it? Because now I know, like, with Hunger Games, we just came back with the Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes you know, which was, you know, like, Harry Potter could come and do a cursed child
mm-hmm.
kind of thing. I don't know what if Maze Runner has that equivalent. But I think it's just too soon at this point to be doing it.
Yes. I mean, like I said, I'm indifferent.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'll go. I'll probably finish the series before I go just to see them all. But, you know, it's something that I, as someone who doesn't have any, like, stake in the game, I think as long as the movie is good, there's no wrong decision.
Mm-hmm.
But we won't know that until we have the benefit of hindsight. And that's kind of the struggle there.
I think I would be more on board if they do something similar like what they're doing with Planet of the Apes, where it is in that universe just really far. And maybe mm-hmm. you could even go like a little meta, like someone's actually trying to reboot the Maze Runner concept kind of thing. But even then, it just too far, like, you know.
Yeah, and that's an interesting point. Something that I wish we saw more of was something like George Miller, where it's the same director who does a reboot. Like,
yeah,
more of that. Like, I would love to see more of that. Like, you know, it'd be cool to see Christopher Nolan do a new Batman movie that's just totally not connected to The Dark Knight.
It's just Batman.
Yeah, but it's Chris Nolan, you know, like, that would be cool. But yeah, either way, like, I'm cautiously optimistic, although this is a side tangent, but Transcendence, can I bring something up here?
Yes.
And please correct me if I'm wrong in the comments on this. Syncope, or Syncopy, however you say it, Christopher Nolan's production company.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure there's only two or three films that they've produced that he did not direct. One of them being Man of Steel, the other being Transcendence, because Transcendence was directed by Wally Pfister, who was Christopher Nolan's DP at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And after Transcendence came out, not only did Syncope really never produce movies that he didn't direct again, other than Man of Steel, I don't remember which one came out first, Wally Pfister has never shot a Christopher Nolan movie again. So, like, could it be coincidence? Yes. I don't know, though. I feel like that was, like, a breaking point of Nolan being like, look, I'll put my production company name on this, but this better be fucking good.
Yeah.
And then it wasn't, and he was like, I'm getting absolutely a new cinematographer. Like, I don't know, like, what, how that happened. I just thought that was interesting.
So I looked up Jack Paglen's IMDb.
Yeah.
So he wrote Transcendence.
Mm-hmm.
He was the creator. Teleplay wrote one episode of a TV series called Roadside Picnic, which I've never heard of. And he did the story for Alien Covenant.
Okay.
Not written by, story by credit.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not even, like, omitting things. Those are his three credits on IMDb.
Sometimes the previous scripts are an indication, hence the writers of Morbius doing Madame Web, but sometimes they aren't. You know, how many times have you heard, like, a script that was really good that just got completely not translated well?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm cautiously optimistic. We'll see how it goes. I have pulled up all of the movies that Syncope has made.
Go on.
Okay, so in looking up, I'm going to make sure, like, Syncope, like, made Transcendence. There's, like, a conspiracy I've unraveled, I think.
We've gone down a rabbit hole.
Maybe I'm right about them, like, ending their friendship because, like, Okay, so this is the only thing that I've figured out is it looks like they may have gone uncredited on producing Transcendence. Like, at one point they were like said they were going to do it, and then they weren't. Because I've looked at Wikipedia, like, tons of stuff that we've gone down that I've edited out. But on fucking Ready for the... on Fandom Wiki, it has their list of films, and then it says other work, and it says producer only, and Transcendence is one of the films. I have no idea what that means.
Well, here's the more interesting rabbit hole that I went on.
Yeah.
I just typed in the Syncope website, because surely it's a production company. They'll have a website.
Yeah.
I found a WordPress site.
Yeah.
But not only did I find a WordPress site, they didn't even pay to have a premium account to have WordPress removed.
That's so funny.
So it's syncopefilms.wordpress.com. So I went to their tab labeled film. And Transcendence is on there, along with BVS,
yeah,
Oppenheimer, Villagers, don't know what that is, Justice League, Batman Begins, but like also these were added like in March of this year to this website because they have the date.
Is it a fake website? I don't know. What happened?
Why would it be a fake website?
I don't know. All right, we're going down a rabbit hole, but I just thought that was an insane thing that we just went down. Oh my god. But anyway, what do you guys think about the Maze Runner reboot? Let us know in the comments as we move on to our next story. Nicholas, what do you got for us next?
Our next story comes to us from variety.com/wordpress. And that is that we have another bidding wars on our hands.
We love a bidding war.
And this is about a novel titled Eruption from Michael Crichton, who wrote Jurassic Park, among other things, and James Patterson, who also wrote quite a bunch.
So if I was a smarter producer, it would have got us demonetized, but when you said Eruption, I would have hit a button and it would have played Eruption by Van Halen. But I'm not smart enough. But this is fascinating because this book, basically Michael Crichton was working on it for a really, really long time, like years, when he passed away. Apparently his wife found the transcripts and James Patterson finished the book. So already, like, big time readers are like, holy shit, like, what a collab, you know? It's kind of like when Steven Spielberg directed AI based on Stanley Kubrick's unfinished idea. Like, huge things are happening. But apparently, already this book, and I'm not even sure it's out yet, but this book is already having people lose their shit in Hollywood. And I'm going to pull from the Variety article here. Hollywood's next bidding war is about to erupt. Eruption, the much-discussed upcoming volcano novel, so it's not out yet, is being brought to auction, attracting a large group of suitors and keen on landing sought-after film rights. The auction being conducted by Shane Solner at the Story Factory and CAA will begin within the next 2 weeks and could kick off as early as next week, Variety can exclusively reveal. The project has drawn interest from major studios, streamers, and networks, as well as high-profile directors who have shared that they'd leap at the chance to helm the project. Projects created by the author or adapted his work, including the Jurassic Park franchise, Twister, Westworld, that's from Michael Crichton, and not even to include James Patterson. The article also says several A-list actors have reached out regarding the novel, which is centered around a man and a woman describing as having a Moonlight or Fall Guy banter throughout a larger-than-life sequence. So
original life action sequences.
Yes. So awesome. We got a bidding war in our hands, and it's gonna be one of the last things credited to Michael Crichton. This is exciting, I think.
They said there's no comparison for this. These two authors have a combined sales of 700 million. This is like George Lucas and Steven Spielberg making Raiders.
Yeah. I mean it's that big of a deal, especially for like big time book fans. Mm-hmm. And look, I'm interested. Sign me up. Anything that sparks this kind of bidding, I'm excited about. It'd be really funny if it was terrible, but I doubt it. Mm-hmm. At least the book, anyway. Just what are your thoughts on this kind of novel sparking a new bidding war?
It's definitely interesting. I always find it fascinating when bidding wars are starting for things that aren't even out yet.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just the name Michael Crichton and James Patterson, everyone's like, oh, it has to be great. And then it just causes, like, what if it comes out and they're like, what the fuck is this?
And they spent all this money.
They're like, how much did we spend on this? You know, this is just seems like a Jason Statham vehicle if I've ever heard of one.
Oh, man. I'm there. Jason Statham 43.
But, I mean, of the work that's been adapted from Michael Crichton, Jurassic World, spawned multi-billion dollar franchise. Yeah. You know, Twisters is just coming out now with their sequel reboot.
And their first movie did Gangbusters.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, and James Pattinson definitely. I know a lot of his stuff's been, I know he's more big on novel. A lot of his stuff hasn't been adapted necessarily, but I know he did, is it Alex Cross?
I think he did. Mm-hmm.
And I know that had a show or movie or something.
There's tons of Alex Cross adaptations out
there. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So I think it's definitely an interesting combo, too, to see them, someone carry off and finish it of that caliber as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I love a good bidding war. I'd be very curious to see who ends up getting their hands on it, because I also think that is also the determinant of the quality that we're going to be getting
as well. This is true, yeah.
Netflix's Eruption is very different than Paramount's. Yeah.
Warner Brothers.
Warner
Sony.
Brothers, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Which I guess Paramount would then be Sony's.
We'll see.
But we'll see what happens.
Yeah. No, I think it's very fascinating. And, you know, I wonder what A24's Eruption looks like. They probably won't spend the money on the rights, though.
No.
But yeah, what do you guys think about this new novel causing a huge bidding war in Hollywood? Let us know as we move on to our next story. And this won't be, a subject for controversy at all. Nicholas, what do you got for us next?
Our next story's come to us from The Wrap. And this is not more of a new expose, I guess, would be. Mm-hmm. That'd be a better terminology. The title, Red One Down, How Dwayne Johnson's Tardiness Led to a $250 million Runway Production. And this is an exclusive from The Wrap in regards to Amazon and Prime Video, I believe. Red One, which is a action Christmas movie starring The Rock and Chris Evans, a.k.a. The Human Torch.
nice pull.
Thank you. Oh, and J.K. Simmons is Santa. You have to release this.
So, The Wrap does have a paywall behind the article, so I pulled a bunch of other sources, and I'm going to kind of give you the spark notes of what's going on here. So basically, it's an expose about The Rock, who typically has a reputation of being an incredible grinder, hard worker, and all this stuff. And basically, it's people talking about, on this movie, he caused the budget to inflate due to being, quote, 8 to 9 hours late on set. For most people, that's just tomorrow.
That's just you're a day late.
Exactly. Yeah. But, you know, film sets typically can run like 10 to 15 hours. So, you know, they kind of just had to work around him, which anyone who's made anything on a film set, whether it be a short film, feature film, super annoying when, like, you have a schedule that you need to stick to and a bunch of people are relying on you. And then now this person's late, especially if it's someone who needs a lot of coverage, considering they're going to be a huge character like The Rock.
Yeah.
Now, you might be thinking, well, how did that blow the money up? Well, after a certain period of time when crew members are on set, then they get paid overtime, which is like, I forget if it's time and a half or double, whatever it is. But like, when you wait long enough, like, you have to pay everyone to be there. And if you shut the production down, then The Rock shows up and he's pissed because you're not filming his scenes and he's there now. And a lot of stuff has been being said about this whole thing. And it also came out that he pisses in water bottles to save time on set, which apparently Ryan Reynolds was not a fan of on Red Notice, which is a different movie. But
different movie for streaming.
Yeah, but these are just taken from sources from The Wrap and other articles here. But it's something that I find interesting, and that I think he also recently fired his publicist. So I'm wondering if this is like, okay, motherfucker, like... I got you. I'll release all the dirty shit. That's just me. That's not confirmed. Just me theorizing. But something that's fascinating about this is, one, the whole Vin Diesel thing now looks weird, because it was like, wasn't this exactly what you were pissed off at Vin Diesel about when you guys did your whole feud?
Yeah.
For one. But for two...
Turns out no one was just on the set of that movie between The Rock and Vin Diesel.
Yeah, but two, also, like, the article does say that whenever he does show up, he's very kind and he treats people very respectfully. That's not the issue. The issue is he's never on time. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people point that to his just constant things that he has to do. Like, he's booked and busy. And if you're somewhere and then they're running late, and then suddenly your whole schedule runs late.
Yeah.
But that's one thing if you're going to be 1 to 2 hours late. 8 to 9 hours late is something different. So basically what the article's trying to point out is, like, is it just he's busy, or is something else going on where, like, he's just being blatantly disrespectful?
And like, is it he's running late because he had to go do voicing for Moana 2 and it ran long? Or is he late because he had to do that but then was like, oh, I need to go work out for 3 hours before I get to
and
set?
And that was another thing, is apparently it built in his contracts is he has 3-hour workouts he has to do, or that he wants to do. And apparently studios pay to move his gym around wherever he goes. So if it's in, if, good on him if it's in his contract, like, nope, I don't shoot until I do my 3-hour workout. But like when you're 2 hours late and you have to do your 3-hour workout, like it's...
Can you do an hour and a half?
Yeah,
something,
you know,
just to...
It's basically just turning into this whole... It's basically not a good look for The Rock. Mm-hmm. And don't get me wrong, this isn't like career ending. But it's just one of those things where now people are coming out who've worked on past production saying like, hey, he fucked up our production too. We're watchers of the John Campia show. And he had reached out to somebody who worked on Rampage. And that person said, yeah, no, he was constantly late to the set of Rampage. And it ballooned up our budget as well. And it's just like, dang, like all stuff that you really wouldn't consider. And it's just an interesting thing, especially with him now going to make that A24 film that he's making where you can't be late because A24 will just cancel the movie because they don't, while they're very successful, they don't spend a whole lot on their projects. So it's just a very interesting thing going on. I kind of just wanted to pick your brain. What are your thoughts on this kind of expose on The Rock? And do you think, I almost did it without laughing, do you think his heel turn in WWE is just leaking into the real life?
Listen, it's definitely a very shocking thing to see because with The Rock, you know, he's putting out movies and you kind of, you really do kind of know what you're getting. Like, he's a massive movie star, but like, they're Rock movies.
Yeah.
Not to say they're not enjoyable. Yeah. I enjoy them very much, you know, but like, it's not like they're these big, like Christopher Nolan type production type things. Mm-hmm. Right. But when you have these movies that could probably be mid-budget, and a lot of that budget goes to just having The Rock in it, that are being ballooned because of this, that's not beneficial for the studios, right? And The Rock has always been someone that has pivoted himself as the hardest worker in the room, right? Mm-hmm. He's so heavily involved in all of the productions, you know, his image on the screen. It is sad to see that he's not holding himself accountable for those production delays.
Yeah.
If that is true and that he's not being held up with other things. But then that's also on him for his own... And his team for
don't
his own
book
scheduling.
The stuff if you can't make the commitment.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, and, you know, especially I'd rather have, honestly, 1 to 2 really good Rock movies than 6 whatever Rock movies.
Yeah. No, 100%.
You know, but it's also an interesting thing going into actors and their agencies. The agency's not, like, agency as in personal agency.
Mm-hmm.
You know, The Rock has... Again, the whole his $7 production, him being so heavily involved, you know, but that is ultimately right now hurting the productions. So at what point then is it on the directors and on the studios to interfere? But they are partnered with him.
With his
production
company, yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So I think there's an interesting thing to say on that. But the whole pissing in bottles thing is so funny. Just go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
No one cares. Like, that's not saving any time. Use the fucking Port-a-John.
Yeah.
Like, really, Rock? Like, come on.
Yeah. And what I think this is, how I interpret this whole thing, mm-hmm. is basically The Rock is an incredibly busy person, and he has now kind of, for a while, gotten away with, oh, I'll just kind of, if I'm a producer on this, I can't fire myself, and I'll just kind of be able to do it this way. And I think this expose coming out is just a bunch of people in the industry letting The Rock know, like, hey, we are sick of this. Stop this, because, you know, your movies aren't exactly doing as well as they used to anymore. So it, having you on the set is no longer a safety net for us. So if you're no longer going to be a safety net, fucking show up on time and let's do this right.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, it's one thing if this movie, you know, $250 million budget, let's say what, so they need $600 to be profitable, which The Rock could clear back in his heyday.
Yeah.
You know, heyday, like 5 years ago, you know, not that far.
Yeah.
You know, that's definitely something the studio can consider. It's like, okay, well, we, you know, mm-hmm. it's going to make money. It's fine, whatever. But that still affects their bottom line.
Yeah.
And honestly, The Rock's back end, I'm sure he has built into all of his contract.
I'm sure, yeah. And I think it's good that it's coming out now, because I think going into this A24 thing, which we already knew was going to be like a creative reset for The Rock,
mm-hmm.
I'm hoping that this is now only, this is also just a ethical reset for The Rock, Because when you get away with something for so long, sometimes you don't realize you're getting away with something. You just think it's fine. Mm-hmm. Like, I would also not be surprised if no one told The Rock, hey, fucking don't do that. Like, people who've been on film sets know, like, for whatever reason, there's a weird hierarchy where, like, you shouldn't speak up about certain things. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I would not be shocked to learn that this article was the first time The Rock's been like, oh my God, people are upset. Like, yeah. I'm not saying that is the case, but I'm saying I wouldn't be surprised if that was the case.
But regardless of that on a film set, that's still on, there are pieces above it, such as the studio,
yeah.
or even, you know, the director whose job it is to rein all of this in,
yeah.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I don't expect the cameraman to speak up and say this is bullshit, although they should if it yeah. is bullshit, you know. But like, the, yeah. that's sort of the job of these other people. The yeah. Rock is the actor. He was paid to be there at a certain time
mm-hmm.
to act.
Yeah. But I also think at the same time, the argument there, which is why I think
yeah.
this is no longer the argument was, let's say the director speaks up and it's like, hey, I'm getting really sick of this happening. It's bringing everyone down on set. Like, you need to do something about this to the studio. And the studio is like, well, he's paying for half the movie. Like, I don't know what you want us to do.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's, and it's also like, we spent the money so he could be in this movie. We didn't spend the money so you could be. And that's where it just gets fucked up. Like, they shouldn't treat people that way.
Yeah.
But I'm sure if the conversation did happen, that's all that's said there.
Is this going to be theatrical?
I don't think so. I think it's streaming.
That's even more ridiculous. They're yeah. not going to make anything off of this.
Yeah. And I know it got delayed an entire year, partially because of this.
That and the, like, strikes, right?
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
But, and here's the, going back to what you were saying before, though, about, like, The Rock maybe not even realizing it, do you think that it's on his team who are maybe potentially even lying to him about timing and be like, no, no, this is when you have to be there?
I don't even think it's that. I think it's just them. I think part of it is his team. Mm-hmm. But it's to them, it's not like, oh, this is when you need to be there. It's, oh, it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
You're fine.
Yeah.
You know, and I think part of that is, again, this is just me assuming, right?
Yeah.
When you get to a certain level of success, you kind of can accidentally surround yourself with people who just tell you yes. And I feel like maybe this is a situation where that's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'd be interested to see, because he hasn't made a comment about the story yet.
It's been out like a week or so at yeah. this point.
So maybe he's just hoping it gets swept. But
mm-hmm.
I'm sure whenever he does press for the next thing, someone's going to bring this up. So it's like he needs to say something, I think. But at the same time, when I heard, oh, there's a damning article about The Rock, I was like, oh, no. And then I saw it, and I'm like, oh, he's just like an A-list person who treats people like shit.
Yeah.
You know, like I...
He's an egotistical narcissist.
Yeah, yeah, you know, surprise in Hollywood.
Yeah.
But still, you know, and I think how he reacts to this is going to be the game changer. Like, will he own up to some of this? Will he just purely defend himself? I think it's going to be a little bit of both. And I'm curious to see, like, how this happens. Like, will this be the thing that gets him to slow down, I think, is the
question. I feel like what it ultimately will be is a non-answer.
Mm-hmm.
Where I think he will own up to it, but then his response is going to be like, I'm taking some time to self-reflect. We're going to really scale back the project output and focus on the projects now. And I think that's going to kind of be starting his campaign into his A24 movie.
Maybe, because right now, I think he might be really tone deaf about it and just be like, I have a lot of things to do. You guys need to relax. Like, I could see that being his response.
Yeah.
But I also think what this is going to start him doing, because I've heard that since he's a nice guy, if he shows up and something runs late, he doesn't say anything either. So what I think is going to happen is if he shows up and it runs late, he's like, I have to leave. I have another thing. I feel like that's just what's going to start happening.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, if this just brings awareness to how people need to be treated on set and how they kind of shouldn't be treated like shit and how important it is to be on time and how it can cost you so much money if you're not on time, if that's what this article brings awareness to, then so be it. I'm okay with that. But yeah, what do you guys think about this expose on The Rock? What do you think the reasons are for the tardiness? And do you think it's something that needs to be changed immediately? Let us know as we move on to our next story. And Nicholas, what do you got for us next?
Our next story comes to us from Deadline, and that is that A24 is reteaming with Talk to Me directors Danny and Michael Filippo, did I say that right?
Yep.
On a new horror movie, Bring Her Back, with Sally Hawkins set to star.
This fucking excites me greatly. I, for those that don't know, new viewers, I loved Talk to Me. I love that movie. I had to vigorously defend it in my friend group when we watched it.
Do you still have the hand right behind you?
I do. I do have the hand. I don't know if you guys can see it. But I think it's a fantastic horror movie, and I think with time it will even be regarded as even better than it is right now, and it was regarded pretty highly now. Danny and Michael Filippo, who were Raka Raka on YouTube, I was also a huge fan of them, so like being a fan of them and then making a film that I thoroughly love, it was a beautiful thing for me. But they are going to do Talk to Me 2, which was confirmed by A24, but before that, they're doing Bring Her Back, which has Sally Hawkins, and I'm now going to pull from the article here. The team have set two-time Oscar nominee Sally Hawkins to star in the movie, which is due to begin production this summer. Plot details are being kept under wraps on the project, which is being produced by Samantha Jennings and Kristen Kuyten from Causeway Films, whose credits also include The Babadook and The Nightingale. Essentially, we don't know anything about it yet, but it looks like it's going to be on the slate for Cannes. Might be what they're trying to do. Probably not this year, but next year. Maybe try to sell it at Cannes and get some more money, maybe. But something Raka Raka also have is a new Street Fighter movie that's going to come out eventually. And, you know, listen, Talk to Me made $92 million on a $4.5 million budget. Sally Hawkins is interested in being with them, making this movie. I'm fucking in. That's all you guys need to know. Literally, there's no plot details. It's these guys, Sally Hawkins. Okay, I'm there.
Listen, as of late, Sally Hawkins definitely knows how to select her roles. I mean, she was Oscar nominated for Shape of Water, which she was absolutely fantastic. Amazing in. She was in the first two Paddington movies, which are beloved movies. Mm-hmm. Recently, she plays Willy Wonka's mom in Wonka. Timmy Chalamet, which was a small role, but that movie was a box office smash.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, so she definitely knows how to attach herself to the right projects.
Yeah.
That's for sure. And it'll be very interesting to see her take a horror turn.
Yeah.
I think she's a great actress, and I think that horror, to me, sometimes tends to have some of the more campy performances, you know, like a lot of people aren't going for Oscars in a horror movie, except for Russell Crowe in The Pope's Exorcist.
Yes.
First off.
Yes.
But it's never a bad idea to add talent.
Yeah.
And I think that is a great talent to add.
And something to add on to what you said, I think a lot of the reason for performances in horror can be considered campy is because it's an actor literally given the most freedom they can have of just like, you're in a life or death scenario. Most of the time you're acting.
Yeah.
So when you get someone who's really good, someone who can convince you that it's not funny, that's a special thing. Those are the horror movies that you remember. And I think Sally Hawkins is perfect for that. Mm-hmm. I think she's going to crush whatever this is. I'm dying to hear more details about this movie. I cannot wait to see it. I cannot wait. And I really cannot wait for Talk to Me. If they don't, listen.
Low-hanging fruit.
They probably won't.
But I'll eat it.
But please, give me one poster that's Talk to Me. Just one with the two.
Do you think they'll go like a colon or something? Or like just a different name and it is just a sequel?
There's no way it's just Talk to Me 2.
Yeah.
Unless it's Talk to Me also. That'd be interesting. But
Talk to Me 2 T-O-O.
Yes, yes. But whatever it is, I'm excited. I cannot wait for Bring Her Back.
They are really booking themselves, huh? We have Street Fighter.
Yeah, it's gonna be really great for them. I'm very excited. What do you guys think about the Filippo brothers teaming with Sally Hawkins for a new horror movie with A24? Let us know as we move on to our next story. And Nicholas, what do you got for us next?
Our next story comes to us from Deadline, and that is that Chris Stuckman's horror movie, YouTube critic, Chris Stuckman.
A great one.
Horror movie Shelby Oaks, which he's been crowdfunding, has added genre specialist Mike Flanagan to the team as a producer.
Fuck yeah. First of all, congratulations to Chris Stuckman. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. And I believe the movie is practically done now. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to pull from the article here. Chris Stuckman and Aaron Kuntz of Paper Street Pictures have added genre specialists Mike Flanagan, Trevor Macy, and Melinda Nishokia, forgive me if I said that wrong, as executive producers on their record-breaking Kickstarter-backed horror film Shelby Oaks, which is in post-production, so it's still being finished. The 2022 Kickstarter campaign for the most raised $1.39 million in under a month, more than doubling the previous record for the most funded horror film on Kickstarter. A combination of documentary, found footage, and traditional film style, Shelby Oaks centers on Mia's fantastic search for Riley, who ominously disappeared in the last tape of her investigation series, Paranormal Paranoids. As Mia's obsession grows, she begins to suspect that the imaginary demon from Riley's childhood might have been real. Stuckman is quoted saying, Intrepid's films and TV shows have inspired me for many years, and it's a dream come true to work with Mike and Trevor on my first feature. I'm ecstatic beyond words to partner on them for the release of Shelby Oaks. So, good for him. And honestly, this is a sign for me that the movie is fucking good. Because I don't think Mike Flanagan would go anywhere near this thing if he didn't think it was at least worth getting out there. Because to me, the problem probably came in, you know, it's their first feature. They raised it on Kickstarter. Funds are probably sparse. They got to finish post-production. They have to distribute the fucking thing. Probably costs more than they thought. They need someone to come in and take that role, show the film to somebody, somebody with cred. Mike Flanagan sees this film and he's like, God damn, I got to do this. Now, I'm assuming that that's what happened. Maybe it was not like that at all. But to me, someone as high caliber as Mike Flanagan doesn't do this unless he has seen it, you know, or knows of its quality. So what are your thoughts on this whole thing?
Yeah, well, for those who might not be familiar, just because we're saying his name a lot, Mike Flanagan is best known for The Haunting of Hill House, The Haunting of Bly Manor, Midnight Mass, The Fall of the House of Usher.
Correct.
Is that the name of the title?
Yep.
And as well as films such as Oculus.
Yes, I love Oculus.
Ouija 2.
Yes, he did Ouija 2, and he did Dr. Sleep.
And Dr. Sleep, probably his biggest one there, which is a great movie.
Yeah, and he has a couple other movies too, but he's a fucking fantastic director.
Now, just from a movie-making standpoint, what role does a executive producer take if the movie's already done?
It's normally to finance and get it where it needs to be to get to the finish line.
Okay.
So, and granted, I could be wrong about this, but you're asking, like, typical, the movie's done, we need a new producer. It's because they need the money.
So Mike Flanagan's basically saying, like, and his production company is like, we'll help get this distributed.
Yeah, like, we'll get this finished in post, and then we'll use our name to help you get a buyer.
Gotcha.
In an exchange for, I'm sure it's whatever percentage of whatever the sale is.
Yeah.
But yeah, but that's pretty much what's going on here. And to me, as I was saying earlier, this would not happen if he didn't believe the film was good.
Mm-hmm.
So...
So is this kind of similar in a way to what Jordan Peele did with Monkey Man?
Similar, very similar, yes. Mm-hmm. So, listen, this is very exciting. What do you guys think of Mike Flanagan joining the Shelby Oaks team to kind of help get it across the finish line? And speaking of Mike Flanagan...
Oh, boy.
Here's some fucking exciting news. Go ahead and tell me, Nicholas.
Yes. Also from Deadline here, Mike Flanagan is now in talks to direct the next Exorcist movie for Blumhouse and Universal.
Correct. And this is actually an exclusive from the Insider newsletter, the Jeff Snyder newsletter. And I think this is really fascinating because I'll paraphrase here because since it's the paywall, I don't want to like show the screen recording. I don't know if I can get in trouble. But basically, the article in Jeff Snyder's report and a little bit in Deadline too basically goes on to say that he is in talks, the deal's not final, but he's in talks to direct the new Exorcist film, but it will not be The Exorcist Deceiver or whatever the sequel is going to be called. Mm-hmm. It's going to be like his own take on it. They're kind of quietly scrapping the plans of that trilogy because we knew that David Gordon Green wasn't going to come back. And basically, they spent all that money on Exorcist. It was like $400 million or something, which is crazy. And then like the first movie made 100 something, but it was also budgeted, I think, in the... a seven-figure range. So it's like they've only made very few compared to what they spent money-wise. So Flanagan's whole thing is he's going to come in and say, hey, you have these rights. You want to make that money back. I'll make your next Exorcist movie, but it's going to be my own.
Yeah.
Now, this doesn't mean that it's going to ignore anything continuity-wise. We don't know really any details about what his pitch is, but we know it's good enough to where Blumhouse and Universal are like, yep, we'll go with you. And honestly, if Mike Flanagan comes to me with a horror idea, the answer is most likely yes.
Yeah.
I think this is super fascinating. I think his sensibilities are perfect for this type of film. I do think it will be an interesting new take on this type of story. But at the same time, I'm curious like how much it will connect to the previous stuff versus what won't. Because The Exorcist Believer did have somewhat of a troubled production. And I'm wondering what his whole vibe is going to be on it. And I wonder if... a lot of his, because he is also in recovery himself, and a lot of his projects kind of have a character or a side of it that revolves around recovery. And I'm curious, just thinking out loud, I'm curious if his story has something to do, his Exorcist story, has something to do with that, because I could see that kind of playing into the idea of faith and demons as well. So as you can tell from my fucking rambling, I'm stoked about this.
Yeah.
This is really exciting for me. What are your thoughts on Mike Flanagan stepping in to take over Exorcist?
I mean, listen, here's the thing. I've only heard you rave about Mike Flanagan. To be honest, the only thing I've seen is Dr. Sleep, which is probably a crime because I do love my horror, and it seems that he's quickly becoming a name in that. I thought Dr. Sleep was fantastic. I think just from its inception, people were kind of like, we're doing this. But I think the result was great.
Yeah.
Here's my question, because also admittedly, as I just said that I'm a big horror fan, I have never seen anything Exorcist.
Boo.
Just across the board. But here's my question. As we've talked a lot on the show about Evil Dead and what they're doing with that, where it's like, what is your Evil Dead movie?
Yeah.
Right? And obviously Evil Dead has a lot of iconic imagery. Typically you're going to get something with a chainsaw, right? You have the Necronomicon, which is very distinct looking. You know, you have the way that the Deadites are, you know, just massive assholes. You know, when I think of The Exorcist, are there certain elements that make it distinctly an Exorcist movie versus could they go with The Exorcist a route that they're going with Evil Dead, or is it just a movie that has exorcisms in it, which is just then a Exorcist horror movie?
Well, I think the trope with The Exorcist, because I've only seen the first one and Believer. I haven't seen Exorcist 2, which I've heard is horrible, but I've heard Exorcist 3 is not bad, which I've wanted to go and watch Exorcist 3. But the trope there is that it's mostly just like one prime character has been possessed, normally someone younger, a child.
Okay.
And it's about like, how do we save the child's life? And in the first movie, which I'm going to make you watch probably this year, we'll bring Morgan, we'll make a whole fun day of it. But basically, the reason why that film, I think, really connected with audiences, other than it coming out in the 70s, being about exorcisms during, like, you know, the Satanic Panic wasn't quite there, but it was about to start, you know, is the characters. You really cared about the girl who got possessed. You didn't want to see her get hurt. One. Two, you really cared about her mother, who clearly was not in a good place in, like, her life in the movie, and just wants to save her daughter. Two. Three, the priest characters, especially the main character, is in the movie thinking about like quitting the cloth. Like he's just kind of like, his mom is really sick. There's something going on. He's just like, I don't feel like I'm kind of being screwed by God in a way because I've devoted my life to him. And this is like, it's not going how it should have gone. Like he's basically just saying like, I feel like I'm done with this. And right at the edge of him losing his faith, he comes face to face with the fucking devil in this girl. And he kind of takes it upon himself to be like, all right, if there's one thing I'm going to do with this life that I've chosen is I'm going to save this girl.
Okay.
And like that story right there, what I just told you, you're like, that sounds fucking good. And it is, it's amazing. Yeah. How scary is it? It depends on your sensibilities. It is from the 70s, you know. But I think with Mike Flanagan, that's where I think his sensibilities come in, is every single thing that he makes, and I know all you have is Dr. Sleep to go on, but each character is unique, has a story, and you're interested in.
But what I'm saying is, right, you make an Evil Dead.
The tropes, yeah.
You make an Evil Dead movie.
You went to the tropes. The trope really is just someone gets possessed, we have to save them.
So The Exorcist movie, if I went to the studio and said, hey, I have an Exorcist movie for you, what I'm really pitching them is just a movie where someone is possessed and needs to be exorcised. And what I'm getting is just the benefit of the words The Exorcist.
Yeah, the IP, yeah.
And then a colon.
Yeah.
But there's not really IP outside of the name.
There can be, which is why Believer tried to bring back some of the cast and kind of bring back that world. What Believer did that was different than the other films is that the priest's characters were not main characters. Like, it wasn't about how they can save the girl. It was about how the girl's father.
But if someone just has a possession-based horror movie, the benefit of partnering with Blumhouse and Universal is you're getting the words The Exorcist and a colon.
Correct.
In front of that. And there's not really any sort of distinguishing factor outside of like in the way the Evil Dead has.
Yeah.
You're just getting the benefit of the IP and the studio backing it.
Yes, and you're getting the benefit of it was the first one. So there's like a... There's a specialty around calling your movie The Exorcist versus The Pope's Exorcist, because it's like, oh, well, the first Exorcist did it first.
And you have and this is a continuation Scott of Derrickson, that. The exorcism of
Emily Rose,
which is not that.
Yeah.
So you're getting specifically the naming of The Exorcist.
Yeah.
But there's not any sort of distinguishing factor outside of that.
I wouldn't say so. Maybe there's a mega fan who says I'm wrong, but to me, it's just more of that basic idea.
Then that's what I'm saying. Like, maybe Mike Flanagan has had on his laptop a possession-based horror movie, and Blumhouse is like, oh, shit, this didn't work out. And he goes, hey, do you want to just slap The Exorcist in front of this?
Yeah.
You know, like that kind of thing.
Yeah, and that's possible.
Which is, it's interesting, I guess. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I wish there was more tangibility to The Exorcist franchise in that aspect, where they could take it and just do that.
That's true. That's true. Quick side tangent. There's a prequel to The Exorcist that has one of the Skarsgård in it. It's the dad, the Baron from Dune. He was making an Exorcist prequel with Paul Schrader.
Stellan.
Yes. Paul Schrader got fired halfway through. They brought in a new director. It might have been Rennie Harlan. Forgive me if I'm wrong about that. And they finished that movie, and it got horrific reviews. Terrible. Kind of like a Zack Snyder situation. The studio was like, hey, Paul, you want to just finish yours? So they did, with the same cast, and a couple years later, released the same movie, but with Paul Schrader's version, and it got slightly better reviews. Like, it didn't get great reviews, but like, there's literally two versions of the same movie that were theatrically released a couple years apart from each other as prequels to The Exorcist, with the same cast and everything.
And it's just relatively the same.
Ish, yeah.
Yeah.
I never seen them. But like when I did for a while, we talked about doing like a show about like alternate film history.
Yeah.
And that was one that I came across that I was like, holy shit, that's really interesting, actually.
Yeah, that's wild.
And yeah. So I just thought that was we were talking about like tropes of The Exorcist. Yeah. I was like, canceling plans and doing them again is also relevant. So
well, like, you know, like that yeah, like I don't know. I feel like it needs something more if they're gonna keep going down this hole, because the IP is only so you can only go back so many times and bring back new things. So I was just curious what makes that unique versus, oh yeah, we're just going to do an exorcism movie and you get to use The Exorcist.
Yeah. I mean,
no one just has an Evil Dead type movie that they can then pivot and just be like, well, I can make this an Evil Dead.
Yeah, no, like you have to make an Evil Dead movie.
Yeah, versus I could write a possession horror movie.
Yeah.
Like, you could have made The Pope's Exorcist and had The Exorcist, comma,
yeah,
or colon, whatever.
Yeah, true, true. I think you're bringing up a good point, and that basically the market of the exorcism horror movie is so saturated that there's not a whole lot of benefit to having a movie called The Exorcist other than the fact that it was the original IP. And you're not wrong. And I think maybe that's why Universal and Blumhouse feel okay with just scrapping what they had, their plans, and just being like, come on in, Mike, let's do it with you. Because it's basically, they're like, we have this IP that we spent all this money on, and we didn't get these rights just to barely break even, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, I think to your point, like, you're making a great point about how the market's oversaturated, and, you know, they kind of need a movie to stand out and be like, no, we are the one, you know?
Yeah.
Like, there can be only one.
Now, the only thing I could see them doing is maybe they they go down a path of, with, like you said, the original Exorcist really kind of focuses a lot on a priest, and maybe we just follow that priest over a few movies doing different things.
Yeah.
But, like, it's at the end of the day, it's still the Exorcist.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. It was just a thought I had. I don't know. I didn't mean to spiral it down.
No.
I'm excited for the fact that Mike Flanagan's making a movie.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting that it is an Exorcist movie IP. I just wish maybe there was some more... Like, I hear Mike Flanagan's making an Exorcist movie. I'm like, oh, so Mike Flanagan's making a possession horror movie.
Yeah.
Versus, like, if they came out and were like, hey, Mike Flanagan's making an Evil Dead movie, I'm like, holy shit, Mike Flanagan's making an Evil Dead movie.
Yeah.
you know?
Yeah, no, it's understandable. And I think that it also, like, when you watch The Exorcist, it's hard to put into words, but, like, it does kind of feel different than the other typical ones that you see come out.
Okay.
And, yeah, but this Mike Flanagan also has a knack for coming in on the sequel and being like, I'll make it good,
yeah.
Like with a Ouija. So, yeah, what do you guys think of Mike Flanagan directing the new Exorcist film? Let us know in the comments as we move on to our final news topic story of the day. And Nicholas, what do you got for us there?
Our final news story comes to us from The Hollywood Reporter. And this is a very interesting one. Kristen Stewart and Oscar Isaac to star in a vampire thriller titled Flesh of the Gods from the filmmaker who made the Nick Cage movie Mandy.
Yes, bisexuals rejoice. We have Kristen Stewart and Oscar Isaac in a vampire movie.
And Kristen Stewart's a vampire once more, allegedly.
Yes. And this is also written by the person who wrote Seven, director of Mandy. Like, I needed one of these to get me in the theater.
Yeah.
I needed Kristen Stewart or Oscar Isaac or the director of Mandy or the writer of Seven. All four? We are eating, Nicholas. I'm going to pull from the article here. Kristen Stewart and Oscar Isaac are set to star in Flesh of the Gods, a vampire thriller to be directed by Panos Cosmatos, the filmmaker best known for the hallucinatory 2018 horror film Mandy. Per the producers, the story follows a married couple, played by Isaac and Stewart, who descend each evening from their luxurious skyscraper condo and head into an electric nighttime realm of 80s LA, where they cross paths with a mysterious woman and her hard-partying couple. Roland and Alex are seduced into a glamorous, surrealistic world of hedonism, thrills, and violence. So, this is exciting.
It is.
It's very exciting. I texted Hannah the link to the story, and she just responded with yes. So, I do think it's a bit of genius marketing to have Kristen Stewart in a vampire thing. This poor woman on that press tour, man. Like, I already feel so awful. It's going to be all the questions about Twilight. But, and before we get into this movie specifically, how has no studio been like, hey, Robert, Kristen, let's do Dracula? Like,
make all the money.
All the money. You make $1 billion. But
it makes so much money.
Yeah, but this film does excite me greatly. All the talent behind it looks like it's just going to be fucking nuts. And especially with the director of Mandy and how trippy that movie was, I can only imagine that mixed with 80s Los Angeles, what that's going to be like. So what are your thoughts on all this?
Listen, I'm going to go more into the director side of this, Panos Cosmatos, because I think Mandy was great. I think it had a lot of mixed reviews on it, but what I found most fascinating about Mandy was it is sort of, to me, took an approach very similar to, holy crap, why am I blanking on the fucking name, Stanley Kubrick war movie?
Full Metal Jacket. Yeah.
And, like, you have this sort of 90 minutes that is the basic training and all that, right? This, like, horror kind of thriller type vibe, and then you have this back 90 minutes that's just a war movie.
Yeah.
That was very similar to Mandy, in that the first, like, 90 minutes of Mandy are really this psychedelic trip of, like, over red and purple pink saturation and all this weird, like, cultish shit. And then the back half 90 minutes, this is no exaggeration, Nicolas Cage takes all of the drugs.
Yeah.
All of them. Forges a heavy metal badass axe and goes on a revenge bloody rampage action movie.
Yep. It's something.
Right? So, like, what I'm picturing now is this couple, and with his style, this 80s nighttime neon aesthetic is going to be perfect. And now we're throwing vampires in the mix. There's going to be so much blood and violence as well. Like, it's just such an interesting mix. I can see why, like, Kristen Stewart would take this on, because I know she sort of likes to go into these interesting particular roles, like with Spencer and with Love Lies Bleeding. I know that there were some sort of fancy, sort of, I don't know the right word to say, but these sort of obscure elements to them, which make them so interesting to watch. And I think that that's a great pairing. And I don't think he's directed anything since Mandy. He did one episode of the Guillermo del Toro Cabinet of Curiosities for Netflix, which I did not watch yet, but I didn't register that he directed one of them. I was like, oh, I will need to check that one out specifically. Flesh of the Gods, fucking badass title.
Oh, yes.
You know, I see nothing but good things in this one.
Oh, same, same. I sign me up all across the board, and I'm curious to see how expensive the movie is going to be too.
Well, I want to also then know who the casting for the woman will be. Mysterious woman.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to find out as well. I don't think they mention it in the article, if I'm not mistaken.
They don't.
All I know is as soon as they market that Kristen Stewart's a vampire, TikTok and social media is going to be insane.
Oh, yeah.
And it's honestly good, smart marketing on them. What do you guys think about Oscar Isaac and Kristen Stewart teaming up on this new vampire film? Let us know as we move on to the box office.
The box office.
Nicholas, what were our predictions from last week?
All right. I had The Fall Guy coming in at number one, Challengers number two, Taro number three, Godzilla Kong number four, and Unsung Hero number five. Dalton, you had The Fall Guy number one, Phantom Menace number two, Challengers number three, Taro number four, and Civil War number five.
I was off by one.
Really?
Yes.
What did we get? What did we get?
So here are the Sunday estimates. You can look at the final Monday numbers in the description below. Coming in first was The Fall Guy. However, only making $28 million, which is not good for that movie. And which is a shame, because it's a very good and fun movie, and I highly recommend people see it. Coming in second, your boy was right, The Phantom fucking Menace.
I didn't even put it in my top five.
Making $8 million in its 13th 100th week. I love doing that bit whenever there's a re-release. thank you. Coming in third was Challengers, only dropping 49%. Making $7.6 million in its second week. Coming in fourth was Taro, making $6.5 million. And coming in fifth, God fucking damn it, was Godzilla Kong the New Empire, making another $4.5 million. Civil War came in sixth with $3.5. I was this close to greatness with that prediction on Phantom Menace.
Oh, so they're not close. They're not even, like, it's not even,
there's not even a chance that it, yeah, it. Yeah, no. If it does, you will see Zoom Dalton pop in here and be like, fucking knew it.
I was right.
Yeah. But yeah, let's dive into the numbers a little bit more here. The Fall Guy worldwide has $65 million with its international numbers, and it was made on a budget of $125. So it's only about halfway to that production budget. It has a long way to go to see profitability. I'm hoping it can stay in there, but the summer season's just started, so.
Well, what's crazy to me is that you have Emily Blunt and Ryan Gosling, who are two massive stars. I mean, Ryan Gosling's just coming off the heels of Barbie, where mm-hmm. he was Oscar-nominated for his supporting role as Ken.
Yeah.
You have Emily Blunt, who's coming off of Oppenheimer, who was also nominated for an Oscar for supporting actor. You have David Leitch, who's made wonderful action movies, and Bullet Train, which I think was a pretty successful movie, if I recall.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's insane that this isn't getting, and a hell of a marketing campaign.
Yeah.
And it's insane that these are the numbers that are coming out of it.
I think there's a lot of factors going into it. One just being fucking studios have been training audiences to stay home, unless it's something that in the marketing says you have to see this in a theater like Dune.
And Godzilla Kong, apparently.
Yeah. And just anything that can hit the pop cultural consciousness like Barbie Oppenheimer, the Barbenheimer thing.
Yeah.
Also, I think that we've known for a while that the concept of the movie star has been dead for a while. You know, that really doesn't drive it home anymore. And two, while the marketing campaign itself has been great, the trailers have not been.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is also a mishap on Universal for that. But hopefully, with good word of mouth, it does have an A- cinema score.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully, it can stay in there, although it is just starting the summer, so who knows?
Yeah.
I'm very curious how IF is going to do.
Mm.
I feel like that movie is either going to completely flop or do gangbusters, and there's no in between. I honestly feel it's going to be one or the other.
Yeah.
Because there hasn't been a kids movie in a minute.
Mm-mm.
And it's coming out before Garfield. So we'll see. Because Garfield, I don't know if you saw, Garfield's tracking to make 35.
Is it really?
And Furiosa opens the same day, and it's tracking to make 50. So that's a big weekend for those two.
Garfield is making 35.
It's tracking 35. We'll see how it goes.
That would be insane.
Dude, it's an animated kids movie. It's gonna do at least 30 minimum.
Yeah, that's insane that it's like taking from Furious.
Yeah. Because the big question too though is Despicable Me.
Mm.
Is everyone just, or the families, are they just waiting for that movie?
Yeah, like, why am I going to go see Garfield when this
movie? Or why am I going to go see The Fall Guy? Why am I going to go see these PG-13 movies that I could take my family to when Despicable Me's coming out, and it's expensive to go to the fucking movies. It could be that.
Listen, the Minions always clear.
They do. It's going to make killer money.
I'm very curious if it gets a billion, because we have not had a movie hit a billion in a minute. Dune didn't even make a billion.
Yeah, I think the last one was... I know 2022 had a couple. Top Gun hit it. Jurassic World hit it. Did any in 23?
Yeah, Barbie made over a billion.
That's right. Oppenheimer got close.
Mario made over a billion.
That's right.
And that was it.
Yeah, Mario.
And then a few got really close. Oppenheimer got close. Guardians 3 was number 4 with 845.
Yeah.
And then Fast X with 7.
Yeah, yeah.
So we have not had a movie hit a billion since
this year.
Barbie and Mario. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd be very curious if Despicable Me, because record shows that it will.
Now, what comes out first, that or Deadpool?
Despicable Me?
Yeah.
Despicable Me 4 comes out July 3rd.
So it comes out before Deadpool. So it'll likely hit a billion first, because Deadpool comes out late July. We'll see how it goes there.
You think Deadpool Wolverine's going to get a bill?
I think it'll get close.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Because the other Deadpools have made in the 700, 800 million range. Mm-hmm. And I think it'll finish at least there. I think if it's great, it'll make a billion. But not if it's good. If it's great, it'll make a billion.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of where we're going there. Challengers, let's dive into those numbers. Now worldwide has $52 million on a budget of 55, so it's still just under that production budget, but with a 49% drop in week two, I feel like this will stay in that top five for a while. I think it has a better chance of sticking around than The Fall Guy, to be honest, just because I think the word of mouth is starting to grow on that film. Tarot, worldwide only has $10 million. I don't think it was made that expensive. Let me check the budget here. Wikipedia is saying it was $8 million, and it looks like from Variety said it was $8 million. So it's already made the production budget back, but, you know, so it's a little bit more to go for profitability, but it is a horror movie, and it's PG-13 horror at that. They have to be disappointed in the $6 million number, but at the same time, horrible reviews. I don't know if you guys have seen bad reviews for that movie.
Such a cool concept, though, too, of, like, the tarot card reading characters coming to life, but it's all in the execution.
And look, fucking Godzilla Kong, man.
Shmoney in the bank.
$546 million has made four times its budget back. Keep it coming. I'll dive into some more here. Civil War now has $78 million worldwide on a budget of 50. It's at 1.6. It's probably not going to hit profitability, at least from theatrical, but, you know, A24's most expensive movie. It could have done worse, though. I feel like they're not too pissed. They're not thrilled, but they're not horrifically pissed either. Unsung Hero, which was the surprise one from last week, now has $13 million domestically. I don't think it's going to get a worldwide release. Kung Fu Panda now has $520 million worldwide, six times that budget back.
Crazy.
Ghostbusters Frozen Empire is at 195. It's not even going to get to that two that it probably wanted. And Abigail is at $34 million worldwide now. Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, it's at 18 worldwide, and Amazon bought the rights for the UK to stream only, so it's probably the end, at least for the real money on that one. I wonder how much Amazon spent.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because I've never been able to find how much they spent in the reports. But yeah, that's the box office for this week.
Did you see that because of the re-release, Phantom Menace jumped back into the top 50 highest grossing films of all time?
That's pretty good. That's funny.
It's pretty good, right?
Yeah. We'll see how long it stays in there.
And I think it's the highest grossing for a re-release, right? I think
it's
reading
up there.
Somewhere.
I don't know if it's number one, but it's up there.
But it's definitely like
gangbusters. It's
high. It did better than the Spider-Man movies, which shocked me.
But also, the Spider-Man movies didn't have a weekend. They were Monday through Thursday.
Oh, that's true. They did get a weekend.
Yeah, and those were... But they were all official re-releases, but again, it was Monday through... It was just supposed to be Monday, and then they did Monday to Thursday. I'm sure it costs more to put it on the weekend.
True.
I do think it will have a big drop, Phantom Menace. I think everyone who wanted to see it has now watched it.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's going to casually go back.
No. Yeah. But, will it be in the top five? 50% drop is four. Maybe.
I know they just did this the marathon, but are there any plans to then like do like episode two or three?
I don't think
three?
So.
No?
Because it was the 25th anniversary of Phantom Menace.
So it was a specific, see.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So we'll see there. I had a funny feeling. I knew it was going to do better than people thought it was going to do. But yeah, that's the box office this week. Let's make our predictions for next week.
So next week we have Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes.
Is that next week?
I believe believe it is. I went first last week.
Fine, fine. I'll go first this week. Number one, Kingdom from the Planet of the Apes. Mm-hmm. I'll go number two, Fall Guy. I'll go number three, Challengers. Number four, Tarot. Number five, Phantom Menace.
Ooh. All right, I'm going to go Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go... I'll go Fall Guy. I'll go Challengers. I'll go Godzilla Kong.
Okay.
What did Tarot make? 10?
6.
6. And Phantom Menace made 8.
It's going to be close, dude.
I'll go Phantom.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm only keeping Godzilla Kong because I want two monkey movie in the top five.
As there should be.
As there should be.
Absolutely.
There should always be a monkey movie in rotation.
100%.
Yep.
100%.
That's what I'll do.
All right. It's going to come close. And if you guys want to participate, please comment your prediction for your top five. And if you're right, we'll shout you out on the show.
Yes, absolutely.
Also, thank you for everyone who's been participating in the surveys that we've been putting in the community tab. I love seeing the results. And some of them really surprised me. Like the first Evil Dead ran away with the poll for the favorite Evil Dead movie.
I know. I was shocked.
Which, hey, happily shocked. It's a great film. I'm partial to two. But hey,
I think I'm happy Django to see the took the Tarantino poll
yes,
there.
Yes, it did. Yes, it yes. did. I'm loving it. So please keep participating. Thank you guys so much for watching, and we will see you on the next one.